Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Is your postman delivering drugs? Yep, they probably are, actually. Spoiler alert. And Jim Connolly, he went to find out more about it. He did a film for BBC Newsbeat. So let's get straight into this. This is Stop and Search on Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces Network, brought to you by Acast in association with Elite UK. Is your postman delivering drugs? Here we go. Behind your barricades. Yeah, but how long can I stay? Behind your barricades. Where true values seldom stray. The drugs market has changed, it's diversified. I think most people can spot that. Through the advent of the dark web, you can purchase drugs online and then they get delivered in the post. So what's going on? How does this work? Well, Jim Connolly wanted to find out more about it, so he created a film called Drugs in the Post. It's on YouTube, and if you're listening to this on your Cast app, then it's scrolling along the bottom as we speak, so go and watch it now. So let's ask some questions. How's this going on? Can we stop it? And potentially, could this make things safer? These are all questions that we need to ask. We haven't got the answer for necessarily, but we certainly need to ask them. So let's get straight into this. This is Jim Connolly on Stop and Search. So I'm really grateful to be speaking to Jim Connolly from BBC Newsbeat that did a really good job at covering what's going on with the dark web and the domestic side of things, of how things are getting delivered. And it was a piece called Is Your Postman Delivering Drugs? Because, frankly, they are, would you say, Jim?
I think it's safe to say that that's definitely the case. I mean, we started looking at it, and it's an obvious link. If more people are buying their drugs on the dark web, and if you look at a lot of the data in the background, and if you look at surveys, the recent global drug survey, that's definitely the trend. And then you only have to put the logical steps in place and go, well, if more people are buying it in that way, they must be getting it delivered some way. And, yeah, other courier services are being used by people on the dark web. But, frankly, if you're looking at UK to UK vendors, so people that are selling from the UK to other people in the UK, the Royal Mail was the main route that we found when we went on the dark web. We looked around, and I don't think... I saw some other vendors that were being used, but I think predominantly, I mean, I wouldn't like to give an exact number, but you're looking at 90, 95% of the purchases on that part of the dark web or dark net markets is definitely Royal Mail. And then you just have to do the maths of the logic of it. You go, well, more people buying that way, more people using that service, people saying millions and millions of pounds worth every day. That means that they must be getting delivered by postmen. And we found postmen, I think it's weird because we found lots of postmen that said that they definitely smelt things, and it was definitely like a weed thing, so they smell weed. You can't smell, a lot of humans can't certainly smell other drugs, obviously, but the weed thing was definitely the thing that they were noticing anecdotally on forums, and then we tracked a few down. But it is quite hard to get them to talk about it because there's other political issues that mean that the Royal Mail and Royal Mail employees don't talk to the press. So that was our biggest stumbling block. But I think in a short answer to your first question, yeah, postmen definitely are delivering more drugs than they ever have done.
And that's quite noticeable in the piece, wasn't it, that there was people winning speech in the post office, but they wouldn't want to do it on record.
No, we started off, we had this hunch that we followed the kind of like global drug survey as a sort of into it, and we kind of found that we went on there, found this Royal Mail link, thought we'd check it out ourselves. Started to test it out by going on forums that are used by lots of postmen. Scouted around a bit, had a few conversations with people, and then people got a bit sort of nervous about our presence on the forums. I think people initially suspected that we were maybe trying to be, say, some kid in his bedroom trying to buy some drugs. And I think that was kind of put a few people off. And then people just obviously didn't want to come forward and have an on-the-record chat. So then, being based in London and Mount Pleasant being one of the biggest, or the biggest sorting office in the country, it was an easy kind of few hours just to kind of go and walk around there. So I just kind of looped around until people got a little bit kind of weary of me wandering around, and people would chat to me. And then I say, oh, can I record you just on my phone? Or just, you don't even have to give me a name. And they were like, no, you can write down what I've told you, but there's no way I'm putting my name on that. And I don't necessarily think it was a drugs issue. I think it's, there's pressures on the Royal Mail. There's definitely pressures on the Royal Mail when it comes to jobs and sort of future of the mail services, which obviously mean that the Royal Mail don't want their employees talking to the press. And there's been a fairly long-standing thing that's happened. But we got a distinct feeling that there definitely were that communication. And then eventually we managed to track someone down who did speak to us, who was a postman, and he kind of gave us, and he was happy for it to go on record. But again, he was like, I mean, we had to heavily disguise the guy. We took him somewhere where he wouldn't get recognised. We filmed him at certain angles and we gave him full anonymity visually. And he was happy for his voice to be used, but he didn't want his name or his face to be associated with it. And he didn't do anything wrong, really. He just did his job. He had packages, he delivered them because that's what was in his bag. And once they were in his bag, his view was, I'm just going to go and deliver them. And I think that's where the kind of interesting kind of line for us came, because yeah, we know lots of people are buying drugs online, but this then makes other people kind of unwitting kind of partners in the drug dealing chain, which is obviously, as a sort of slightly kind of crass journalist, it's kind of like a good line, isn't it? Your postman's delivering your drugs, sounds quite good. And then when you find out that that's actually happening, you're like, it's good, because it's like, it's something that you can go to other parts of, like for me, I'm looking around for who wants to feature my story. And the fact that people that you see every day are now part of a drug dealing chain that frankly never were, or never were much. I think we've always known that bits of drugs have been posted between students when they've gone off to university or when they've gone to Amsterdam on a holiday. I think there was a definite, that was always happening, that kind of trade back of little bits of drugs being sent around. But this is like a fairly large scale kind of drug dealing. I mean, the guy that we met that bought it, he bought an ounce of MDMA, which isn't, that's definitely not personal use, is it? So, well, it'd be hard to prove that it was personal use if the police came knocking, I think, at that point.
That's a lot of dancing and partying.
Yeah. It's a bit, yeah.
And it must be difficult for the postal staff, because, as you said, there's pretty much a mandate of, you've just got to deliver what's in your bag.
If you're a postie or postman or, we're a postwoman, I think the issue for us and what we tried to get the Royal Mail to come and address with us was the idea that, yeah, the postman is just doing his job. It's in his bag. He's picked up however many hundred letters he posts a day and shoves them through people's door. That's his job. I mean, no one is pointing the finger of blame in any way, shape or form at the postman. But the questions need to be asked of, how are the drugs getting moved around and why are they not being stopped? And when we were at Mount Pleasant, speaking to the posties and postal workers, so sorting office staff there, we had people of 25, 30 years experience talking to us, and they had never seen a drugs dog. Some drugs dog would be an improvement if you're going to try and stop that trade. And I'm sure, and I know for a fact, that the Royal Mail do put dogs out. There are scanners, there are ways of checking. But the fact that a lot of postal workers never see any of that, some of them have never experienced it, would suggest that there is a weakness there. When we spoke to the Royal Mail, they gave us the statement saying that they don't unwittingly deliver any mail. They do check, they are on top of it, and it's not for them to sort of kind of moralise, really, I think, in a great sense. I mean, they're there and they're doing the checks they feel they can with the ability that they've got. But if there's a large volume and an ever-growing volume of drugs going through the post, then the questions go further up the chain. Is it the Royal Mail? Is it the government? It's a lot of people that you've got to look at and think, who's stopping the drugs moving around? Because then if you take the step back and go even further and look at drugs entering the country on the dark web or dark net, I always say the wrong one of the two, You've got questions there about customs. I mean, we didn't get into that, so we've not really dealt with customs because the purchasing we did was UK to UK. But let's be honest, the majority of drugs coming into the country are not made here, are they? I mean, if you think about the logic of what people are buying and consuming, there's a, you can maybe the weed stuff, the weed and things like that is getting grown over here. But frankly, I mean, a lot of drugs don't grow over here or aren't manufactured over here. So they're coming in through some way. And the dark web's definitely, or dark net markets are definitely an active route, because it's not just people buying for their own consumption. You look at the volumes of stuff that's moving around, and that's not just personal consumption. And it's probably not just a kid selling to his mates. And obviously that kid is a dealer by definition, but we're talking about people who are definitely small-scale dealers in their areas becoming more and more savvy on the darknet, and that's for selling their stuff but also buying their stuff. I think that's a, speaking to the people that we did in our research, that's definitely something that they've noticed.
So from a layman's point of view, is there a difference between the dark web and darknet?
Not it's one that just used, it tied my heads in knot. The dark web is this kind of the larger kind of grander terms for what people would call this thing. The dark net is this more specific area of the marketplaces and these things. So you've kind of got, it's very technical, but we were very careful where possible to keep referring to dark net when we were on a dark net marketplace, which is where they're buying them. Whereas the dark web is this kind of like much more overriding kind of, I don't know, because it's kind of, it's weird because it's not a tangible thing in a sense of it not being, it's not real as it's not a physical thing, but the dark web is the overall arching kind of concept of secretive internet use. And then you've got the dark net, which is more the marketplaces and the other sort of forums and things that are going on within it. So we were having to be quite careful, and having not talked about it for about a month and a half, I'm slipping myself, because I'm just like, it was constantly this kind of like, right, are we saying the right thing here and here? Because people that are really into it, like the guy who features in the piece, his life is researching that part of the world, that part of the internet. And he was very keen that we got this right, and we were representing what he understands of the internet. And I'm not a computer person. That's not my area of interest. I don't understand. I mean, IT, I mean, anyone that knows me knows that I'm rubbish at IT. People at work would laugh that I'm doing something on the darknet, because I'm the one that's always kicking off when I can't get bits of the computers to work on the most basic kind of settings. And I'm there on this bit of the internet that no one really understood. And we're all sitting there going, blown away by this thing that we had on this work laptop. And you're like, wow, this is not what you'd expect. Other than it being a drug story, which obviously everyone expected me to be involved with because that's all I seem to do, I don't think anyone could believe that it was me working on a bit of the internet which was marginally technical, because it did take a bit of getting your head around.
Did it feel like another world? Because you have to go through quite a process to achieve this, don't you?
I met, for anyone that, I mean, anyone listening, the piece, there's a guy in the piece called Chris Montero, and Chris got put in touch with him via Jamie Bartlett, who works for Demos and wrote this book, Dark Net or Dark Web. I don't know which one of the two he wrote, but it's basically he was sort of like the go-to guy. So I went to him saying, I'm looking at this. And he said, well, don't speak to me, speak to Chris. Chris is the guy that really knows what's going on out there. He's like completely on top of it, and he knows everything there is to know, and he will be a great guide to you. So I met up with him over lunch. He told me about it, told me how it worked, gave me some estimates of what he thought the marketplace sizes were, what he thought the scale of it all was, what he was hearing was happening on there, on this world that he was researching. And then I went back to the office and took my work laptop out and tried to follow through what Chris had told me. And as previously discussed, I'm not very technical, so I was sat there thinking, God, this is going to be really hard. And it kind of is and it isn't. You have to download a browser that works pretty much like Google, but it's just really slow and a bit rubbish, frankly. And that you've got this browser that you download, and then from there you then need to know the specifics of the site you're looking for, so the specific URL, and then you use that browser to go and find the marketplace. And then when you get on there, I mean, the first time you click through, I was sat at my work desk and you're just like clicking away, like open it up, and it looks like eBay, but it looks a bit rubbish. And then you're like, oh, and it's just like my screen has never, my work screen has never had porn all over it. And I was like, oh, there's loads of porn all over my screen because there's obviously porn available for purchase. And then you have to obviously select, like on eBay, I'm looking for, rather than CDs, DVDs, books or whatever, you click down and there's like drugs, digital services, which, I mean, I think you'd be pretty brave to go veering into there because I think you might find quite a lot of weird stuff. Weird, like highly illegal, highly inappropriate, awful stuff, I would imagine. But the drugs bit, then you click on the drugs part of it and it's just this kind of like, it slightly blows your mind the first time you do it. Have you ever been on?
I haven't.
No, it's worth going, it's worth browsing on there.
As you said, I'm so technologically illiterate. That
it's possible, it's not hard. If I can do it, you can do it. And it's worth going on because it is kind of like, well, I kept just showing people it. I was just like, look at this. So it's randomly like, my dad's an ex-cop. I was like, showing my dad. I was like, look at this. And it's like, oh, it's just, it's mad what's on there. You're like, this is crazy. There's like, oh, which bit of the drugs marketplace do you want to go on? There's heroin. There's this. And I was like, bloody hell. Like, it just blows your mind. And then you click, then you go a bit further into it and you start clicking through. And you become kind of quite aware that the people selling it are just obviously just some dealer. And he's got, I remember one we went on, which was, there was like a subsection of like weed, which was hash on this like drop down menu. And you have these guys, and I can't remember, they've got like Hash Brothers or something. And they're selling this stuff, and they were, I don't know if we knew where they were based, but basically they had a piece of scratchy paper, which they'd drawn on with biro and then coloured in these bubble letters with Hash Brothers or something written across it as their kind of company logo, as if this was like a legitimate business. And then on top of that, little bits of their samples. And you're like, this is mad. This is like so amateurish. But then at the same time, the reason they're doing it is quite, I think it's quite fascinating. The Chris, the guy I keep referring to, says the scammers on there. So they're trying to legitimize their products and saying that we are here, we are real. And we're not some sort of fake corporate brand on here. It's just some guy that's got some hash to sell and that's what we're doing. And you kind of like see it. And it's weird because putting my BBC reporter hat on, you're like, wow, this is amazing. You kind of want to show people that this kind of side of this thing. But then you realise that what's there is highly illegal. And clearly the way that we report stuff on the BBC, there's a kind of like, we have to go through certain guidelines to put stuff out and we can't be seen to, one, show people how to buy this stuff. But you kind of want to show people just how amateurish and ridiculous this is, because this is like highly illegal, in the view of many people, highly dangerous, because it's a link into a world that's got anything and everything illegal in it. But yet it looks kind of like childishly ridiculous. And I remember just like kind of laughing, but at the same time being like, I can't be seen to be laughing because this is really serious. This is like a prop. This is like, I'm two clicks away from buying heroin over here, and I've got this guy selling hash with this kind of like, what looks like a school child's drawn his company logo. And it's like, I found it one of the most surreal things I've ever done at work on many levels. Like going through and buying drugs while you're at work is quite a surreal thing to do. But more so the interaction with this weird website and this weird, what felt like a very weird kind of crazy world. And I just, like I said, kept saying before, I was like having to show people it just to say, can you believe this exists? And can you believe I'm two clicks away from going on and buying like heroin, but it's being sold as if I'm buying like, I don't know, I'm buying a lot of records on Discogs. It's like buying a record on Discogs. It's like very good conditions, got a few scratches. And this is like, this is what it's going to do to you. This is how I'm going to disguise it coming through the post. And you're like, wow, yeah, that's heroin that's for sale there. That's not a record. That's like, that's not a DVD. That's not any, that's heroin for sale. You're like, this is one of the weirdest places I've ever been. And then you think, oh, look over there, there's the digital services. That's just like, you just know you're going to get into some kind of level of trouble over there. And there's weapons for sale, there's this for sale. The hitman thing, I think, is a misnomer,
So presumably there's an element of urban myth still.
Oh, massively, yeah. I think Chris is interested in the guy who was the researcher that helped me get access to it and was kind of one of the people we went to for sort of information and kind of guide through it, he's trying to sort of break down a few of those myths, because whether you think it's a good democratizing effect for the drugs market or you think it's a gateway into illegal, dangerous substances that will kill you, what it isn't is what a lot of people might have argued it is. And that's not to make this seem... Because the weird thing is you can get sucked into it thinking, oh, this is quite a kind of fluffy, kind of crazy world because it's heroin for sale, but it's on a stupid picture or whatever. But you've got to realize that it's heroin for sale, and even just the marketplaces, like the number one most popular marketplace is run by Eastern European mafias. Well, that's a pretty dark place to be getting involved with. And that's not even the vendor that you're buying it from, because your vendor that's selling it is probably connected to some crime gang or connected to some criminal network, or not probably, is connected to some criminal network, even if it's just his own criminal network. He is a criminal network, and this is a highly illegal space that's selling incredibly dangerous things. And that those two things can't be lost in the kind of like novelty factor of being in that space. And I think that's what sort of, on one level, there's me going, oh, can you believe this? Look at this. This is madness. And everyone kind of gathering around at work or whatever, and you're like, or showing your mates screen grabs down the pub going, have you seen this? Look, this is what I'm doing at work. And they're like, what? This is madness. And it seems kind of like novelty fun. And then you're like, actually, no, you've got to keep taking a step back when you're doing something like this and realize, I think it's not just because I work for the BBC, but I think it's highly irresponsible to report drugs in any way other than what it is. It's a serious, dangerous world. And whatever your views on drug legislation, whatever your views on how people consume drugs and the way that people consume drugs, whether you think that we have got it right and we should be more strict, or whether you think that, you can't get away from the fact that at the heart of it is it's a dangerous place and there's dangerous people existing in there and there's dangerous consequences of doing something with a final product that you could buy on there. And that's kind of difficult from the kind of novelty, kind of wow factor of the story. You've got to be careful because you've got to take a step back, otherwise you can get sort of like dragged into like, oh, isn't this weird and funny and quirky? Well, it's not. It's highly dangerous and really kind of serious, and people are exploiting other people's weaknesses and miseries on there, and that's dangerous in itself. And then you've got the backstory to all these people who, and then the crime gangs that are running the whole thing. It's just like, I mean, that's a crazy place to be existing.
Even though you were doing it for work, you must have got adrenaline, both negative and positive, over doing this. Because as you said, it's just a completely different world and a different space that you've just found.
Yeah.
I would personally be inherently terrified of going into that realm.
Yeah. To some extent. As I just mentioned a minute ago, my dad's an ex-police officer. And it was actually in the lead up to Christmas, and I had a few moments during it when it was like ordering it and picking it up, and not the kind of browsing it, because you're not doing anything wrong at that point. You're just having a look around something. You're not really breaking the law at that point. But the moment you start to actively engage with it, you're like, well, now we're moving into it. And I just thought, God, this is going to be some Christmas dinner kind of conversation with my dad. What have you been up to at work? Well, I got arrested the other day because we were messing around on the dark web at work. Would be how he hears it in his head as I tell him it over Christmas dinner. That's going to ruin everything. So I was like, well, that's kind of weird. So I think I always had his voice in the back of my head a little bit, because I know, it's my dad, isn't it? So you kind of like, you bound to have your dad's voice in the back of your head telling you, be sensible. But there was moments where I was like, well, this is kind of like, we've kind of done something now. And once you start to commit to it as well, you kind of realize that you can't go back. There's that, you can start the process of investigating something and then you go, oh, now we've committed to it. And whilst we took a lot of steps to make sure that whilst we were breaking the law, we had some level of kind of backing by work, by the law itself, that nothing too serious was going to happen to me if it all went wrong. Because we were trying to prove, we had an editorial justification for doing what we were doing. We'd been told and we'd done enough research to see that this was a growing issue, and we wanted to test it, and we also wanted to test the weaknesses or perceived weaknesses that we could see in the postal service. So we had reasons to be doing it. So we were fairly confident that if something went wrong, or I got arrested, or something happened in that very short period of picking up, getting tested, if anything happened in that segment of time, I was fairly kind of sure that I wasn't going to get. I mean, we were buying tiny amounts of drugs. We weren't buying vast amounts to test the system in that sense. But you're not going to get away from the fact that you're breaking the law and it is illegal. And if you got caught, it's not going to be an easy process to get yourself out of it. So, or not get yourself out of it, but at least
some sort of safety net.
Yeah, some safety net so that you're not going to end up kind of facing some criminal conviction. I mean, everyone that I spoke to, lawyers, both external and internal in the BBC, were like, look, as long as you follow the same, keep a very good paper trail, do all the right things, do your job as a journalist, prove that you've got something before you start leaping in, be sensible, you're not, the level of risk is fairly low. And they were more concerned about what we were portraying and how we were making it seem as a process. But I have to admit that standing in the post office...
Because you had a long wait in that post office.
Yeah, it was pretty scary, I must admit. And that was... And it's my local post office because I had to buy it on my... We bought a PO box or rented, or I don't know what you do with a PO box, acquired one for a year. And I put it through and I bought it on my own credit card and then put it through work expenses. Because obviously it was a legitimate work purchase, and that was another thing that had to go through a series of kind of, look, we're proving something. But it was my local post office, so it's where I went to go and pick oversized mail or things that I'd missed. So I was walking in to my local post office collection service going, it's quite weird, this. And I had my two colleagues in the car, one of them trying to hide, not from the law or be all kind of like whatever, but didn't want to be in shot on the front of the cameras on the front of the car. So he's hiding under a coat for bits of it so he doesn't appear. So he's easy to blur out in the end edit. So it all feels a little bit like kind of rogue traders gone wrong, because it's just two guys from the office and me going into my local shop, local post office or PO box centre, speaking to the woman that always serves me. And it was all a bit surreal. And then she went off to this section where I knew the PO boxes were, having seen her go off and collect other people's mail in these PO boxes. And then she disappeared. And she was there for ages. And then she came back and she's like, oh, it's not there. I'm going upstairs to check. And I was like, I bet that she's not. And then you start getting these kind of like mad paranoid thoughts. And I was like, I bet one of the three packages some of the packages have been intercepted. And they're going to go and call the police, or there's something going to happen here. I'm going to get in trouble. And I was the bit where I text my, if you've seen it or heard it, the bit where I go and text my colleague was not done for any level of drama. It was done for, I don't know what we do at this point, as in we had a set plan of what we were going to do, but how long do I wait in here for this set plan of what we're going to do? I can't run away and go off. So I was like, right, I'm just going to stand here and accept that if a policeman walks through the door in a minute, I'm going to be walking down the police station with him. But I was like, it's not a very relaxing kind of 3 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon kind of thing. And I was like, well, this was pretty stressful. And then eventually she came down and there'd been a problem with the way they'd set up the PO boxes, and they had all three packages and we got the packages and walked out. And then you're traveling through central London in a car with little packages of drugs in it, or what you think might be, because you're not allowed. The other thing is we couldn't open them at all. So the bit in the car where I'm driving along with, well, my colleague's driving and he's asking me what's in there, and we're just feeling the packages. Again, that's not done for any element of like, oh, what could be in there? This was genuinely, we don't know what's in there. What does it feel like? We need to talk about that at some point. Well, we might as well do it as we're driving across London, because I couldn't open it until I got to the government approved lab at the far end for loads of different reasons, but the main one to give myself some level of kind of safety if anything went wrong legally. So there was kind of moments where I was like, this is actually ridiculous. Like, what are we doing driving around on work time with work kind of blessing? Like, I had to go and like get numerous letters or email chains and letters signed off by people. And I think I was like, well, this is mad. But what was kind of interesting was waiting and wondering how they disguised them. And we were like, this is what we were, all three of us were like, I wonder what's in there when we get there. Are we going to get what we ordered? And how have they tried to disguise them? Because the reality is that the disguising thing is just, that's not really disguising anything. That's a consumer kind of, that's trying to trick consumers into thinking they're somehow safe. I mean, if you put something into a package that smells of drugs because it's drugs, and you go into the package, there's a fairly high chance that you're going to have touched that package at some point with your hands and got contaminated again. So there is no element of what the disguise that was in there that would have actually worked. The guy that tested it for us was like, this is for show. This is for consumer confidence. There's no, if the post office want to know what's in that package, they're going to know what's in that package. They just haven't got the manpower or the time or money to do it efficiently, because otherwise, as the guy in the piece says, you'd be waiting months for your mail, and that's just not acceptable. No one's going to want to wait months for the mail for what is, never forget, quite a small amount of, well, a microscopic amount of the post that's got any drugs in them. So I think it is kind of, it's an interesting kind of, yeah, it was definitely one of the most interesting days I've ever had at work, where you're just like, this is not only quite surreal, like the ordering it was quite surreal, sitting in a cafe in London, coming back to the office, checking your emails. Oh God, we've had drugs delivered. This is like not things that you normally do on a day-to-day at work, but it was quite, I just found the whole thing fascinating. But again, going back to that point that I made earlier, it's like you're saying, it was a criminal, you're doing something wrong. It's a criminal activity. You're aware that at any point it could go wrong. And whilst for me, if it went wrong, it would have been a laborious process of going through it, trying to unpick what I'd done and why I'd done it. It would have also been quite hard to then claim that lots of drugs were getting undetected in the mail if they'd detected my drugs in the mail. So my story was kind of, would have fallen to pieces at that point. But if you were doing that as a drug user, as the guy in the piece did, the terror levels of doing that, I mean, you'd have to be a fairly kind of brash, confident, slash stupid, naive person to think that, to think anything other than, oh my God, is my stuff going to get here? Am I going to have 3 days of just panic waiting for stuff to come through the post? Because if you get caught, you face the same, it doesn't change just because you bought it in some kind of like cyber realm. You're still potentially, if that guy got caught with all those drugs, he was still going to jail. I mean, he had enough drugs to be deemed a drug dealer. What he was doing with those drugs, that's another story. But I mean,
ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Yeah,
it's a great film. It's a really succinct piece, and I think you get the suspense across perfectly. And
that's
one of the
big credit to the guy that I should say this, because he genuinely, the guy that filmed it, who was in the back of the car under the coat, his ability to edit it was amazing, and he's a very talented guy. But
it was
also,
like a thriller.
Yeah, we were like, the three of us were like, this is weird, isn't it? They were sat worried on my behalf, but they had just sat in a car at the end of the day. So there's a kind of, it was weird, because I was like, is this going to come across? Because we couldn't use any of her, because we would have been technically secretly filming or recording her. So we couldn't use any of her. So we had to kind of, and thankfully they'd had the foresight to keep filming in the car. And when the text came through, was able to do a bit of like, oh, Jim's just texted, he said this. And that was a genuine kind of to and fro. And there was also an element where we said, just keep recording everything and keep some record of what's going on. Because if anything does go wrong, we need a very short and easy way of going, look, there's some tapes here, we can prove that we're not Well, we wouldn't be master criminals if we were buying three tiny packages of drugs, but we weren't. Criminals is what we were trying to sort of have at the back of it. And I had a piece of paper with all my emails in the seat well of the car, and I was like, well, and that wasn't paranoia. That was like, you know, this, I don't want to, if I have to prove it, I'm going to have to go. I don't want to be kind of getting them up on my phone and trying to show them to a police officer. I wanted some form of like, I had all my ID and everything on me. So,
you bought a small package or a pill of MDMA,
yeah,
hash, and some spice, like, yeah, substance. And the MDMA came in, what, like a Haribo packet?
Yeah, right? That was the worst, frankly, the worst disguised out of the lot, because although the spice came in just an like a regular envelope inside a Jiffy bag, there was almost like they hadn't bothered making an effort with that. It was just like, here. And obviously there's probably reasons for that. It was UK to UK sending. And also, because of like the law as it is regarding spice, it'd be quite hard to pin anything on anyone there, because the only person doing anything wrong in that chain is probably the person selling it, if you look at current drug laws with relation to spice. Because me owning or possessing that tiny amount at that point wouldn't have caused me any problems. So they probably were quite relaxed about it. The Haribo sweet was ridiculous. It was like a packet of Haribos that they'd cut open with what looked like a kitchen knife, rolled up in something to make it a bit squidgy so it might feel like a Haribo, but it didn't. And then just shoved it in the packet and put a little bit of, it didn't even sellotape it up or heat seal it or anything. So that was frankly a rubbish disguise. And you can imagine the process of some guy in his room rolling all this stuff up. He'd have had traces of that drugs all over those packages. So if anything was being checked, it would have been the most pointless disguise. The guy says to us, he might as well just not bothered. Frankly, he might as well have done what the guy in the other one did and just put it in something. I suppose it gave it an element of, it wasn't going to get smashed up, and it might have, I mean, you'd be pretty stupid to have seen that. And a Jiffy bag with a bag of Haribos in there, all half torn open, and you wouldn't be suspicious as to why it was in there. So that was a rubbish disguise. The tea one was interesting. There was one which was T-Tox, the fake brand T-Tox, and it was supposed to be a sealed package with tea in it for freshness, and it had like some kind of weird kind of like faux Chinese logo on it to make it look like tea, I suppose. And then inside there, and that was in like some packet that was designed to be scanner proof and smell proof. But talking to the guy who tested it for us, he said that, I mean, frankly, that's not really a particularly effective disguise, because putting it in and out, you'd probably have contaminated it, because I'm convinced that guy at the far end isn't going to know exactly how he's going to get in and out there. They're not necessarily smell proof anyway. Very few, if any, are. And the scanner thing, that's not true either. So, I mean, that was definitely done for user confidence at the far end. But this is why I think that's one of the interesting things about the darknet, is that it's built on trust. But that's the whole nature of it. It's capitalism in its purest form, if you like. It's built on, you buy a product, if it's any good in inverted commas, you give it a good review, and then other people know that it is there.
You made a comparison to eBay,
yeah,
which is a good example.
Yeah, it is. It's eBay. Well, we kept calling it eBay for drugs, and it kind of is eBay for drugs. But what you've got to remember is the person at the far end isn't really bothered about you or your safety. He just wants you to come back and buy more drugs, because he's a drug dealer, and that's what they do. So you've got to think, the logic of you thinking you're safe because you're, I mean, getting away from the consumption of drugs, which is a completely different issue to what we were looking at and trying to prove or disprove within the piece. Just the buying and purchasing of that drug, you weren't any better protected because it was in this packet. In fact, it might have even drawn more attention to it. It was a weird moment in the piece, because we thought, oh, it's when it got opened, we did look at it and think, oh, they've made a really good attempt. And the guy who opened it was like, it's a rubbish attempt, really, because it's not going to stop anyone checking it. It's not going to stop the smell. It's not going to stop the scanner. It's there to give you confidence as a consumer. And that's quite interesting, because it kind of breaks down the whole kind of value of the darknet to users, doesn't it? The idea of the darknet to a user is, this is safer in their mind, because they're buying it in this kind of covert way. But if the covert way is failing because it's actually slightly rubbish what they're doing, there's no point having the covert nature of it just disappears. So it's a kind of illusion of a fail-safe system, because it isn't fail-safe and people do get caught. And you don't have to go very far to see reports that people do get caught on there, because go back to the point, you're breaking the law, you're doing something that's illegal, and if you're buying large amounts of it, it's highly illegal, and depending on what you're buying, and dangerous. And that's, you can't lose that in the middle of all this. You can't lose it and think, well, this is a novelty way of doing it. This is dangerous, and it is a dangerous world, and the people at the other end of it are not there for your safety and not there to kind of look after you. They're drug dealers, and drug dealers, not notoriously nice people. I mean, that would be a kind of slightly cheap, naff kind of summation, but they're not there to look after people, are they? They're there to make money out of you, and that's what they're doing, and they're making it in an illegal fashion. So that's kind of, for me, it was interesting seeing the three things come through. I was like, this is weird.
And you spoke to Yvette Cooper, the chair of the Home Affairs Select Committee now, and she was quite surprised. She didn't know that this was as big a problem as what it is.
Yeah, she's new to that role. And I think, honestly, I think people... if you think about the nature, and we mentioned it earlier, of what is going on in the dark net, you've got to bear in mind that the dark web is probably the better use of the phrase in there, the dark web. You've got to think, if you're trying to crack down on this, which the authorities are doing and are doing successfully, intermittently breaking down networks, breaking down across borders, breaking this down, where would you put your focus if you were trying to look at this? There's child pornography, there's illegal weapons, there's terror, like shocking stuff that would like blow your mind, credit card fraud on a massive scale, like stuff that's, and that's like the majority of, or not a majority, that's a large part of what is going on that place. So you've got to think, where would you, your focus be? If her focus will be on child protection, and probably quite rightly, but she did acknowledge that, yeah, there was a big problem here and there was questions for people to answer. And I think the interesting thing, as part of her role as the new Home Affairs Select Committee chair, she's going to chair a committee report into the future of policing and looking at cybercrime and cybersecurity as part of that. And you've got to realise that this is going to become part of that investigation. What, not necessarily what we found, that would be slightly kind of crass of me to start claiming that somehow because we found something out that they're going to go and look at it, but it was definitely something that she acknowledged was there and something that she wanted to discuss further with people. And I think really, yeah, it will be part of it. The drugs element will be part of it, because it's definitely a growing issue and it's an issue that the authorities want to crack down on. But the other parts of the dark web are definitely probably of a greater concern to them because of what that's going on elsewhere on there. And I suppose, in a way, if you can crack down on one bit, you might inadvertently crack down on the drugs bit anyway.
As you said, that there's quite a focus on data breach and weapons. You know, these are the things that people got major concerns about.
Yeah, and the child pornography element of it is definitely, I mean, that is a huge issue on there. I mean, to the point where you're like, I wouldn't feel comfortable clicking on it. So you kind of, more, but human curiosity says, I wonder what's behind that drop down menu there. You're not going to click on that. My interest was on what people are buying on there within relation to drugs. There's other people out there that investigate that stuff, and all credit to them. And that those people that are doing that, they know that the dark web is definitely a place where that sort of criminal activity is going on, and frankly I think everyone would accept that that's probably where the focus is going to be. But that's not to say I do think that there is now a renewed kind of move to do that. And the government, I mean, I'm just looking on my notes here, the government confirmed to us how much money they were spending on this, and I think it is fair,
billion
on cybersecurity over the next 5 years. So I think they didn't come and speak to us, but they did give us a fairly chunky statement, and they did reaffirm their kind of stance on it. And it was the kind of stance you'd expect with relation to drugs. They see drugs as dangerous and therefore they're illegal, and that's their drug policy. You can't question that. That is their policy. There's no kind of grey areas with the current system. That's what they kind of view the system as, and they can. I think everyone is in agreement. And you look at the statement, £1.9 billion over the next 5 years. And the National Crime Agency Cybercrime Unit is this kind of their kind of flagship part of that. And they're definitely spending a lot of money looking at cybercrime. I don't think that's... And I think you only have to look at a fairly kind of... I don't think a week goes by now without cybersecurity or cybercrime being in the news in some way. And this is a little tiny slither of that. But it's another element of why the authorities are worried about it. Look at the recent elections we've had and issues of cybersecurity there. Look at fraud on a major level. Look at the organised gangs and crime that must be going on there. And that's a part of the equation that I think everyone would accept you need to crack down on if you want to have a safe society. And this is an element of that for the government. I mean, I'm not sure how much of the £1.9 billion is going on the drugs issue because it's a pool of money. But I suppose... if you're tackling cybersecurity as a kind of wider issue, the hope is you catch parts of, in your sort of giant Venn diagrams of doing stuff, I suppose you hope that your sort of one of your little bits of your circle cracks over one of these marketplaces and brings them down as part of your investigations. Because the links between the people who run the marketplaces, these eBays for drugs, and organised crime is direct, and it's organised crime on a very sort of serious and scary level. And isn't just about drugs, it's about human trafficking, it's about weapons, it's about instability and danger in the world, all connected to these gangs. So I think there is an element of the government, whilst didn't want to come and speak to us about this, definitely spending money in this area. And I think they're working with each other because that was one of the things that we definitely kept coming across was while some countries are doing better, in inverted commas, at fixing it, I think you can definitely see that there are levels of coordination that we probably haven't seen between governments on other issues, because I think it's no good the government here spending £1.9 billion on cybersecurity if other parts of the world aren't doing anything, because the nature of the internet, it's not in one place, is it?
And this is where it creates the strange ethical dilemmas as well, because some people will say that the dark net is there doing some kind of self-regulation for the issue. Others are going to say that it does breed organised crime. And it does get to the point of where do you best apply resources? And that's what we've got in the physical world as well, of the drugs market we've got. You know, the police services are doing different approaches now. Do you think that there could be a way forward where we will have a more nuanced discussion within that?
I think it's hard to say that, because I think it's a very fair point. The government aren't distinguishing there between, aren't telling us what, they're not going to tell us, are they? They're not going to come on and say, oh, we're spending this on this and we're tackling this person here or this organised crime gang here. But if the drug policy is X at the minute, which is drugs, we're not moving on this, they're dangerous, illegal.
Zero tolerance.
Yeah. If that's your policy and that's the policy of lots of your ally countries, you're working on that together and you're seeing cybersecurity as one big pot of money and one big pot of resources to tackle this. I think they would argue they're doing the right thing. They're trying to tackle a global issue by working together with other governments. And I think this idea of, are we going to see a more nuanced way of doing it? I honestly couldn't tell you. I think at the minute you've got drugs policy as it is, you've got policing as it is, and those two are kind of intrinsically linked, and they're interlinked across the world. We spoke to New Zealand's customs, and that was interesting. They kept getting flagged up as being the best at sort of cracking down on this, but they say they were quite open about the fact that they deal a lot with their UK colleagues. They aren't working in isolation, and I think the nature of the dark web or the internet generally, or this concept of a cyber world that we live in, means that the boundaries of where we, I think kind of physical boundaries become slightly irrelevant. And without getting really kind of deep and kind of like off the topic, if you think about the way the world is at the minute when it comes to globalization and the way that things are changing massively and potentially leaving people and parts of it behind in that kind of movement, this just is another element of this. This idea of like the cyber kind of interconnectivity is something that I'm not a very technically minded person, but I can see looking out in, you can see how kind of like massive this is, and how can you can't tackle every marketplace, and it kind of does boil down to similar arguments that you get in the kind of physical world about drug dealers. You can't tackle one, because you tackle one, another one pops up and sells it somewhere else. And on an internet-based platform, it's even easier for people to do that, frankly, because you don't need the infrastructure. You just need to be much better at computers than the people trying to crack down on you. And at the minute, there's a lot of marketplaces out there to buy drugs. So you'd argue that whilst they are cracking down, and when I say they, I mean global authorities, while they're cracking down on that, it's very hard, because you get one closed and it's whack-a-mole, isn't it? It's the same in kind of the physical world of drug dealing. You get one dealer off an estate, another one pops up. You get one dealer off the dark web, another one's going to pop up, because there's a lot of money to be made out of it. And I think that's where it kind of like all becomes very difficult to sort of distinguish, because maybe the focus is so big, it's really hard to kind of like be nuanced about it, because this is somewhere we've never been before as a world. I think that's it's interesting, but it's kind of deeply frightening if you really think about it, because it throws up lots of different questions going forward as a kind of globalized society, which is quite fascinating / terrifying if you don't really understand it, which I think most of us would fall into that latter category.
Well, that's the perfect roundup. Jim Connolly, thank you so much. I'm going to put the link up so people can watch the film, and I do recommend people do watch that film.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's just gone on. There's been if you don't want to watch it, there's been a radio version that's just gone up in the last week on Radio 1 and 1 Extra. But the visual one is staying up probably, I think, for the rest of the year. So there's that one up there as well.
Well, make sure you do watch it. And thanks so much for joining us, Jim.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much, Jim, for giving us that conversation. You may have heard that conversation elsewhere, but we've re-edited it and republished it because we wanted to make sure that we shared it with our Stop and Search audience. So thank you so much for listening on that. And if you want to find Jim on Twitter, he's at he's at GYME7. So let me spell that out one more time. To follow Jim Connolly, at GYME7. And as you can tell, I was reading off the screen. Right, a few thank yous. Thank you to Nikki and Tristan, the producers. Thank you so much for all you do. And thank you to the two Johns, John Cross, who is our Leak UK social media, and John Harris, the Distraction Pieces Network social media, who also does the Dream Factory podcast, which I rave about. I've got to do our Leak UK social media, and I can never remember it, so bear with me. Here we go. At ukleak.org is our Facebook. ukleak.org is our website. At UK Leap is our Twitter, and at UK Leap is our Instagram. Phew. I will do that fluently one day. I really will, I promise. And thank you. My name is Adam Richardson for all the artwork you do us. Please go find him if you need any artwork needs. And also thank you to Johnny Borrell for our theme tune. Thank you so much for all you do. Right. I think that's it. And we've got some amazing shows lined up. And I'm not just saying that. I'm just about to start editing another one, which is going to be pretty damn good. So thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you again soon. Bye. Behind your barricades. Yeah, but how long can I stay? Behind your barricades. Where true values seldom stray.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.